They've said that starting before Christmas is not a reality, but they haven't written off that the NBA will start before Christmas Day. I've said to Ben, my position has been...
Yeah, it's not happening. So I don't think that's happening, guys.
But do you think Christmas Day is out?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we're starting until January, February here. I think the league is pretty adamant to try to get fans back in the building from a revenue standpoint. I don't see Christmas Day. I mean, certainly things can change, but I don't see that as being realistic right now.
Yeah, just because if they can't get fans back into the stands, that's kind of your biggest money-making revenue day.
Yeah,
at least I have to assume
it's a huge. Yeah, I mean, I think what's going to happen is we're going to probably have a timetable where we will probably have a draft in mid-November, and we'll have free agency a week or two after that starts, and then it will almost be like July 1 when, you know, we're 3 months from the start of the season again. So, like, just because the draft and free agency is in November, December doesn't mean we're going to be going like 3 weeks later. I think, I think you're probably looking at probably the earliest, like MLK Day, probably even a little bit later than that.
Man, it's like normally you can say, well, the NBA draft is huge and so is NBA free agency. But it's like, hey, this is the year with a flat cap and the biggest free agent is Fred VanVleet. And it's a draft where you didn't see anybody in the tournament, and one of the top guys got suspended for like day two of his college career. Like, catch the fever. That's a tough one. This is gonna be interesting for the NBA. So let's go to Fred, because we've spent a lot of time talking to you about him. I think that you were the first person that started telling people the buzz was he was going to get a lot more money than everyone originally anticipated. That this guy's bet on himself was going to pay off. We had talked about originally, I think the first conversation we had was about the Atlanta Hawks and some teams being fearful that Fred VanVleet could get up to $20 million. Where do you see his kind of market right now? Because everyone in the city is really, really fearful. Well, I shouldn't say everyone. Me is very fearful that a team like the Pistons, who have some cap space and who can't exactly spend it on much better players and who have a link with Dwayne Casey, will come over the top and absolutely blow out his offer.
Yeah, I mean, I think we start with Detroit, right? I mean, I think when we go through it, it's almost like a process of elimination, right? I mean, there are five teams with cap space. One of them is Miami. I don't see Miami as a player, you know, especially with, I think the goal is to retain Dragic. And then you've got Atlanta with can he play with Trae Young, and Charlotte with Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier. And then it leads you to kind of Detroit and New York. I think the big question is going to be is how much teams, knowing that they are losing so much money here, and although teams have cap space, how much disposable, income does Detroit have to go out and spend $15 to $20 million on a player like Fred? Certainly New York's maybe a little bit different here, but yeah, I mean, Detroit, I mean, that's, I think you can make the connection certainly with Coach Casey and having the familiarity, and, you know, New York with holes all over the place here. So I think if you're Toronto, I think the one thing you don't want to do is kind of put all your eggs in the basket for the summer of 2021 free agent class. I know we're talking about Giannis, and we'll see what happens with the Clippers. Those two guys could be free agents again here, because then that what happens is that you wind up losing guys like Fred that you might have for, you know, multiple years here. So I think you do have to be cautious. You can always go out and create cap space, but I think for his market is, you know, is he willing to come back on a 1 year big number in Toronto? I mean, that's a hard ask, because as I wrote in the piece that, you know, his minutes have gone through the roof here. And then, you know, where is his body going to be in 2021, if he waits a year here? So I don't know. I don't think he's a $20 million guy. I mean, I think he's probably $15 to $16 million. But I think that's not based on 1 year. I think that's based on multiple years here.
Yeah, and if I were Fred, and if I was guessing what Fred would do, especially – considering these uncertain times, I would probably take the security. I would think he would too, and I don't think anyone would fault him if he chased a bigger number on a longer-term deal outside of Toronto. The idea, or the big question, is whether Toronto would match it. And you mentioned the flexibility for that Giannis market. It's, can you give us a number where you think, man, if it's a multi-year deal at this number, it would really surprise me if the Raptors matched it?
Yeah, I mean, well, he's unrestricted, so you don't have to, you know, there's no matching.
Right.
I mean, he can go out and get what he wants. And I think when you look at their books and, you know, it's like when we started with the conversations, like there's so much unknown. Like, what am I basing 2021 off of, right, the cap? And right now we're basically, you know, we're going to leave it flat. We're going to leave it at a flat 109 over for next year and for the following year, which has a huge impact. You know, you probably don't see an OG extension this summer because – or this offseason, because that will take room away here. What happens to Ibaka and, you know, certainly Ibaka, Gasol, guys like that. You can go out and sign, you know, Fred, you know, for, you know, a big number, but then that probably costs you Norman, right? I mean, like, so there's like this trickle-down domino effect here, you know, in the summer of 2021. But, yeah, I mean, if the focus is solely on 20, then you can bring back all these guys, but you just have to make a decision if it's going to be on multiple years. For Ibaka, is it going to be on a 1 year deal at a big number?
Yeah, that's funny though, because I hadn't even really considered the idea of a 1 year contract for Fred VanVleet, despite his track record of doing short deals. Even I think it was a 2 year contract that took him to this unrestricted free agency that the guy was finally going to be looking and saying, I'm never going to have higher value than this, just considering, even with a flat cap, the free agent market I'm going up against, the potential for a couple of suitors that could be interested in me in both New York and the Pistons, and yeah, maybe Atlanta, I don't know if they still slide in there, that yeah, he's going to be looking to solidify himself at this point. You're right, too. He has had an injury history throughout his career. Why does he want to keep rolling that back? So do you think that it is realistic that the Raptors are going to come to him and simply say, hey, man, here's a ton of money on a one-year deal, and here's way less money on multi-year?
Yeah, I think so. And I think you can make the argument from Toronto just because of what the unknown is going to be as far as revenue is going to be. I think when we get the cap numbers for 2020-21, hopefully the 21-22 season is going to be part of it. I think it will, and that will help everyone from a budget standpoint. And if you go to Fred and you say, here's 1 year at $22 million, that's hard to turn down. I mean, that really is, just because we don't know, you know, what the uncertainty, what's going to be out there. I think the other thing, too, guys, is like 2021 is not going to be much better. I mean, if we keep this cap flat, I mean, we eliminate a lot of teams that thought that were going to have a lot of cap space. It's basically the same five or six teams, and maybe we add three or four. So the market right now is not great to be a free agent. It's not great this offseason. It's probably not going to be great, you know, unless you're Giannis in the summer of 21.
So that market, though, does that lead you to believe that the Raptors are going to retain both of their centers, one of their centers? How do you see this shaking out with markets for Serge and Gasol?
Yeah, I think Mark, you know, I mean, he's probably on a, you know, this is probably the tail end of his career here, so he's probably looking at, you know, $4 or $5 million. You know, he's probably a guy, if you have the tax mid-level at $5 million or part of your mid-level, that's probably what he would be looking at. I think, you know, Serge is, you know, I thought he's played real well here. You know, I don't see him getting, you know, $12 to $13 million on the open market outside of Toronto, because it goes back to the teams with cap space. Does Serge want to finish his career in Charlotte, or does he want to finish it in New York? Or I don't think Miami, because of with Dragic, and how does he feel with Adebayo? So it's again that process of elimination where he can go out and get the full mid level, which is $9.3 million. But basically, that's equaling, you know, that's a 2 to 3 year, you know, 2 to 3 years, $27 million. Does he want to do that? Or does he want to take maybe another big number, maybe take a big number for Toronto and go back into free agency next year?
Talking to Bobby Marks, ESPN Front Office Insider, and it's going to continue to be a conversation until pen is put to paper with Masai Ujiri. We heard it from Adrian Wojnarowski seconds after the Raptors were raising the Larry O'Brien trophy that he was a potential suitor with the Knicks. We know they've shored up, I suppose, their executive situation there. What is your feeling on Masai Ujiri? We just got news that the Raptors have signed Nick Nurse to a multi-year extension when he only had 1 year left on his deal. Maybe that's an indicator. What are you feeling in that regard?
If I'm a Raptor fan, I'd feel comfortable with Masai. I really would. For what he's done there, for what he loves that city, and I think there's, I think there's still some unfinished business, although you won a championship a year ago, as far as to kind of, it's almost like, you know, it's a challenge, right? I mean, it's a challenge to try to get back to, you know, to an NBA Finals and to a championship here. And I think when you look at the landscape of the league, like what is out there, for him would be out there for him to pursue. We can eliminate New York. You know, Washington doesn't have an opening here. There's not that many. And I don't think Houston's going to open up with Darryl. So there's not that many, you know, Sacramento is certainly not that appealing, I don't think. So there's not that many openings. And I think there's a comfort level for him, you know, long term there.
Man, if he left Toronto for Sacramento, I don't know how it ever I don't think Sacramento
could afford him. I think they'd have to be passing the hat around, guys.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh, is Renadinev going to give him his entire fortune to do it? Because it's the only way that I could see that going down. I think he'd want a significant part
of ownership.
Yeah, the only reason this came up is that we had Jalen Rose on the other day, and he kind of – he floated around the idea that it wasn't as secure as we thought. We were like, wait, what? We kind of thought we had moved off of this once the Knicks solidified their spot.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I always have thought that with Masai, it has to be a massive job. It has to be something in LA or in New York, and that, you know, there doesn't appear to be anything there imminent. And then if it's not that, then maybe it's just actually a move outside of basketball. So, yeah, not going to overly concern myself with that right now. Still believe that he is the key holder with the franchise. I am curious, though, about the league's perception of Pascal Siakam after this series, because
yeah.
I'm sure that you've talked to a lot of people about it. We're struggling with it as well, because there have been a lot of points made for both sides, right? Which is that, hey, he's not the first all-star to struggle in a postseason series. He wouldn't be the first guy to come back better from it. He's been playing basketball for not a very long time, and so that the growth, we've expected it to be linear and to continue to take these big jumps, and that expectations got out of whack. But then there's also like, yeah, well, he doesn't have a lot to lean on in terms of confidence, in terms of building it. And he has been someone who throughout his career, people have kind of just only celebrated because he has made these leaps and bounds. Where do you think the league is at just in terms of the way they view this player who, again, is on a max contract and I still think expected next season to be the focal point of the Raptors offense?
Yeah, I think, and it's hard. And we're not naive. I mean, he struggled. I mean, like, he struggled to the point where we were all probably thinking, right, you know, is Nick, how much, you know, rope can Nick give him here, right? Like, does he put him on the bench? And he didn't do that. I think what I want to do with all these guys who played in Orlando is that it's hard to evaluate that type of setting that these guys just went through, where you basically can find them from a mental standpoint, from a physical standpoint. It is a lot to ask of these players here, and not everyone has the mentality of Kyle Lowry or Fred VanVleet here to go through it. So, but there was a learning curve in that Boston series. You know, I think he certainly, from an offensive standpoint, yeah, certainly there's a lot to grow from. But as I say, when you're signing guys to max contracts, the majority of it is not what they did in the past. You're basically buying stock into the future here. So you're buying stock into Pascal's into his future here. So I'm expecting him to come back in 2020. I think this probably gives him a lot to think about in the offseason.
When you're an executive and you're watching how the end of that game 7 is going down, you're watching how Pascal Siakam has played since the restart, since he's played in that series, and just how poorly he played in that game 7 after 6 games of playing poorly against the Boston Celtics. How much do you want your head coach to think about the future of that player with that franchise? Or do you want him to just stay in the moment, do whatever it takes to win that game right then and there? Or are you thinking about the larger picture issues with Pascal Siakam being the face of your franchise for the next half decade?
Yeah, and I think I'm sure there was conversations leading up to games, you know, 5, 6, and 7, as far as with the head coach and with Masai in the front office, as far as, and more from Masai just listening, you know, like having Nick explain as far as the role, you know, when is there a point that if his minutes go down and you really allow the coach to make a defense for that player there, and then you listen and you play it out, and then when the series is over, I'm sure they'll go back and sit and watch, what happened here. Is I think the last thing you want to do is really, kill the kid's confidence. But, you have a whole off season now, to look back. And as I say, kind of focus as far as what went wrong, when you compare what happened in the regular season, because in the regular season, there was a point when we were thinking, man, he's like gearing towards first or second, or maybe not first, but second or third team All NBA by the way he was playing, and he really fell off the cliff here, and it's basically like breaking down his body of work to figure out what they can do in the future. But yeah, it's not like Masai sitting there during Game 7 saying like, Coach, when are you going to take him out? I'm sure there's already, there was already a knowing as far as how much rope Nick was willing to do.
It's still tough for me evaluating it because his defense was so important and his rebounding was so important.
Yeah.
It was very clear that they were still trying to get out in transition, that they thought that there was their best path moving forward. So, I don't know. I've gone back and forth on whether or not he should have benched him, considering the way that Serge was playing, but also the Raptors' only path to victory against the Celtics was uglying it up, muddying it up, making it a complete rock fight offensively, and then hoping that, you could catch a few breaks. And so did Siakam still represent your best chance of doing that with his defense and his ability to switch and defend Tatum and Brown and all those guys? Like, probably. So I'm not as upset about it as I was in the moment, as Pascal Siakam had his fifth turnover of the game and they drew up a play for him in isolation after they came out of a timeout. Maybe just not that one. Maybe just that thing I would like to have back. So this is something that is going to be everywhere for a really long time. And in Toronto, it's weird because a part of me thinks that if he was to go to free agency and he was saying situation depend or just looking at every situation and money wasn't as big a factor, that Giannis Antetokounmpo really would believe that Toronto was a spot. But he unfollows all his teammates. They have the meeting with him in the front office. We don't know what that is. We don't know if that's just him trying to tell the front office that he's displeased or his teammates that he wants better from some of them. Like, we don't know what the message he's sending there. It seems pretty clear, though, that if he does ask for a trade, that Toronto's out of the mix because they won't have the assets to move for a player like that. Like, why would Giannis want them to trade Siakam plus a bunch of things and then come to a hollowed-out Toronto, that it would have to be in free agency? But what are you hearing in terms of Giannis Antetokounmpo's level of happiness with that front office, with that organization? And do you think that he still will sign his Supermax? Because I think time's ticking when it comes to that.
Yeah, I mean, the deadline would be the first day before the season starts. So we don't know. We don't know when that's going to be. It might be January. It might be maybe then December, February. So we'll see what happens. Do I think he will sign it? I'll say if I was advising him, I would advise him not to sign it. That's what I would tell him. And I think if by him not signing it, it really kind of puts his foot on the gas as far as to be assertive and ask for, certainly changes as far as from a roster standpoint. I think once you sign that, your leverage really goes out the window here. And I think from a financial standpoint, the money's going to be there in 2021 that it was, this offseason here, even if he, God forbid, got hurt, because we know there's a market for franchise players when they get hurt here. So I think from that standpoint, I think he will play out the season. I think he will look – I think that meeting was reported. I think with his personality, and you've seen it in his interviews, is that you want to ask him if he was going to guard Jimmy Butler, and he's like, I'll let the coach decide on it. The coach makes decisions. I think for him, he's going to have to be assertive, and I think that was probably step one of him being assertive. And as I wrote about, I want to know about, are we willing to spend the luxury tax? They weren't willing to do that with Malcolm Brogdon. What's the game plan? Not just for next year, but for the next 3 or 4 years here. And I think that will, I think that will let it play itself out here. But yeah, I mean, do I think he'll ask to be traded? No, I don't. Even if things go off the rails here, I think, but I do think he will play out the next season here because as I said, that Supermax will be sitting there in 2021, and there'll be teams, of his liking maybe that have cap space that summer also.